Blog Talk Radio.
Hope you get good listening.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, this is Vera Resnick, homeopath, introducing another episode of Who's Reading the Organon. And Debbie Bruck is amazingly with us by cell phone from, where are you, Debbie?
I'm in Dallas. I just got off the plane.
Wow.
I just arrived.
To the Organon.
Yep. Okay, we're flying here. And I don't have my book, so I'm going to have to get one. But in the meantime, I'll listen to you read.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to tell people about what you're traveling to?
Well, I'm doing a short stop on my way to the Liga, which is going to be beginning on May 18th. And you can read all about that on the events calendar on Homeopathy World Community. So this is just a short hop, skip, and a jump for me to visit my sister.
Okay. Right. We're going to be starting in today with aphorism 257. If you remember before, in the last show we were talking about 254, 255, and 256, which related to when the patient is not willing to tell you that he's feeling worse or when he's not willing to tell you that he's feeling better and how to assess the situation. And now here in the upcoming aphorisms, Hahnemann gives a few more tips of how to do this work. You with me, Debbie?
I'm ready. I can hear you.
Okay, great. I'm keeping an eye on the chat on the Homeopathy World Community, by the way. So if anyone does have comments, I hope the sound quality is good enough for you.
Who's on the chat today? Anybody there?
Who's on the chat today? Yeah, there are people on the chat today. There are 8 people, including me. So let's get moving, and we'll see if anyone chooses to join in the conversation. In 257, I'm reading from Berica. The true physician will take care to avoid making favorite remedies of medicines, the employment of which he has, by chance, perhaps found often useful, and which he has had opportunities of using with good effect. If he do so, some remedies of rarer use, which would have been more homeopathically suitable, consequently more serviceable, will often be neglected. Basically, don't play favorites.
Okay.
I know it's
tell
something
me
that...
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's something... I think many homeopaths at the beginning can fall into this. I know that I fall into this, and to some extent the existence of Polycrest on the one hand shows a group of remedies that have a very broad healing scope. On the other hand shows a group of remedies that many homeopaths will turn to without exploring other remedies that could possibly be more helpful.
Right. They automatically go to what is familiar to them, what they know the best,
mm-hmm.
and fit the person into the remedy instead of the remedy to the person. In a way,
I think it's a very natural process. It's something that we need more awareness of. It's the same as sometimes. Have you noticed sometimes we tend to ask advice from one person about an awful lot of things, whereas sometimes we need to spread out the people that we ask because different people have different specialties.
Definitely,
and it's possible the person
you should. specialist.
The person we're asking about business knows more about relationships, and the one we're asking about relationships knows more about math, which is also about relationships, but...
Okay. I'm here. I'm listening. Yes, I'm listening
to
all...
I feel like there's a time lag sometimes.
Okay.
So let's go on to 258, where we see the reverse situation. The true practitioner, moreover, will not in his practice with mistrustful weakness neglect the employment of those remedies that he may now and then have employed with bad effects, owing to an erroneous selection from his own fault, therefore, or avoid them for other false reasons as that they were unhomeopathic for the case of disease before him. He must bear in mind the truth, that of medicinal agents, that one alone invariably deserves the preference in every case of disease, which corresponds more accurately by similarity to the totality of characteristic symptoms, and that no paltry prejudices should interfere with this serious choice. Okay, long sentence syndrome. But basically, this is a reverse situation. Maybe I'll check this one in O'Reilly also. And see
right,
how it reads from O'Reilly.
I'm looking at the Cumsley version, yes. And in the book that I'm looking at, it says, conversely, in treating new cases, the true physician will not be over-suspicious and disregard remedies that he has now and then used with bad results through improper selection. And he says that's his own fault. He will not avoid remedies for any reason other than that they are unhomeopathic to the case, which is exactly what you read, and mindful that the only medicinal disease agent meriting attention and preference in any case of disease is always the one that is most similar to the totality of the characteristic symptoms, which is what you also said, and that no, he calls it petty bias, should interfere with this serious choice. So it really reads very much the same way.
Yeah.
And here's the blame.
The terminology
right.
is a little scathing. But
yes.
Really, like I remember this case that I had, which I think I mentioned in connection with a previous aphorism, where I gave calcium 6C. I think I possibly even gave it as an olfactory dose. Low, cautious, careful, and the patient aggravated for a month. And it was like every time I thought of taking calcium off the shelf, my hands were shaking, and I was in fear and dread of the remedy. And I felt that
right.
I wasn't prescribing it. How many people out there are scared of prescribing carcinazine, of prescribing cefalenum, all kinds of remedies which have all kinds of nuances and questions, and each person has their own. And here he's
yeah.
really saying, go beyond, forget your own emotional concerns, and prescribe based on what's homeopathic to the case.
Yes, it's very difficult. It's kind of an emotional investment in something that's happened before. And it's hard to then withdraw yourself from that kind of an emotional bias, really. Not, you kind of say this remedy has a potential for harm. It's almost similar as when I first started, they always say, I don't know where I read it exactly, it said don't ever use 200C. That's what I first
yes,
learned.
Yes, they're supposed to say never use it because of aggravation, that it's an aggravating potency.
Yes, so in
but
that
it
sense...
it has its time and place.
Yes, it does.
Carry on, Debbie.
I agree. Each remedy and each potency has its time and place. And, you kind of are you're getting like a forewarning from another practitioner or your own experience in a situation, and then you kind of steer clear of it. And you can't do that. I guess you have to really have some courage to go in there and look at it without any bias.
I think there's also, and also that was part of Hahnemann's genius, in my view, that very often we're hesitant to prescribe when we think of the substances we're prescribing. We're prescribing substances like arsenic and substances that in themselves, if they were given in real material doses, would not be safe. And Hahnemann's genius was that he managed to harness the power of poisons in a way that is safe. And this is
right.
This is the whole interesting part of how the law of similars existed. It was known, but people couldn't use it really because they didn't know how to harness it. And to use the law of similars could mean danger to the patient. And Hahnemann's genius was to harness the poisons, to harness their power, but to neutralize them as their danger. So as with any medical care, if the carer is proficient, if the homeopath is proficient, as if the allopathic physician is proficient, we can harness the power of poisons in homeopathy. That was a little convoluted. I think I'm catching long sentence syndrome.
Well, you kind of go wherever you need to go with the thought, and that's the idea of the show, that we just get into our own commentary about what we're reading, and it takes us to new places. So I think it's all pertinent. And, in a way, what it made me think about is how the patient also has a certain amount of fear when you say that you're going to give them arsenic for arsenicum and it's made from this substance. It can cause trepidation for somebody, especially
mm-hmm.
if they're afraid of being poisoned. And things like that, especially as we use the miasmatic nosodes and things like that, unless you're able to explain it, your choice, explain the choice to the patient if that need be, or why, how remedies work, or to explain, you probably have to have a self-conversation when you choose a remedy. So when you're having this inner conversation in your mind, you might come across your own personal bias. And in that sense,
mm-hmm.
coming face to face with that, and hopefully you will face that and do the right thing. So, yeah.
It might be interesting, Debbie, for each homeopath to, or maybe even on a monthly basis, to write a list of all the prescriptions they've made, just to look at the spread, to look at the statistic. Was this an Akramika month? Was this am I avoiding something? Am I favoring one remedy too much because I prescribed it yesterday, so it's sitting on my mind, so it's the first remedy to come up in my mind in today's prescriptions?
That's a great exercise. In fact, I find what happens is if you're studying particular groups of remedies or you're taking a class and you're learning about plants or minerals or animals, that automatically you're attuned to that and you're kind of looking for it as opposed to
mm-hmm.
seeing the blank slate and letting that remedy come to you, whatever it is that's speaking. You already have a mindset that steers you one way or another instead of being totally open. So I think that's
mm-hmm.
a great exercise that you just proposed.
I think also, I'm sure others have experienced this, that every now and then I hit a few days where I seem to be prescribing the same remedy every day. I've seen
okay.
sometimes articles on that saying that a guy who wrote, I don't remember who was saying that he was prescribing a lot of carcinosin because that's what the generation needs at this time. But I don't know if what happens is that we land up with a personal bias simply because maybe we need that remedy at the moment and everyone around us seems to need that remedy at the moment. But maybe that's not so. I think it requires a fair amount of self-assessment to see why we're doing that.
That's
like
one
thing.
Yes, that's one way of looking at it too, that you feel like this is what the population needs, and so you just have an automatic protocol for what you think is coming in the door. And also, there are a lot of people who say, these are the remedies that I attract. They're like, these are the types of patients that I attract, and they always need a plant, or they always need a mineral, or whatever it is. And so the question is that really actually what is happening because of the law of attraction, because of the energy quality that you exude and the person needs? These are kind of unanswered questions. But for Hahnemann, he specifically wrote in the aphorism 258 that this is something to look out for, to be cautious about, to be aware of. In your mindset, your emotional attachment, and how you select your remedy.
Mm-hmm. It seems to show also that it's well worthwhile for homeopaths to do a sort of peer supervision on each other, like to work in tandem, not necessarily work on the same cases, but to discuss cases with at least one other person, so that they can take it outside their personal prejudice range, outside their personal viewpoint range, and have more of an objective look at what they're prescribing and why.
That's an excellent suggestion, Vera. I mean, and part of the beauty is on Homeopathy World Community, we have so many expert professionals and people who have lots of experience, all different types of patients, all different types of cases, who you can get advice as if you're a professional homeopath. And there is a place, a group on Homeopathy World Community called Cases for Discussion, which is a private area that people can put up some when they have a question. So let's keep that in mind, that if you have any doubt, that you can get help and you should get advice. That's kind of going back to what you said at the beginning about seeking a specialist.
No, but I think here I'm actually not talking so much about speaking to specialists. I'm talking about sharing with someone else who's also professional, who's not necessarily more expert than you, but who can give you a fresh look because they're not you. That's the type of interaction, the asking advice. I know the Homeopathy World Community offers tremendous resource for asking advice. And I have found, I have been very impressed by homeopaths worldwide who I found are always willing to answer an email saying, help, what do I do next? I found this from the beginning of the time that I was practicing, that everyone is even though there could be some very virulent arguments on some of the lists, everyone is basically extremely approachable and willing to help, and there is a sense of community. But here I'm actually talking about when you finish your studies, team up with someone you studied with, not necessarily to work together, but to report to each other. Say, I prescribed this. What do you think of this case? Oh, I would have prescribed that, just to open it up, to open up the walls of prejudice around specific remedies.
Well, thank you. There's also something that comes to mind when reading Aphorism 258. It starts off with, in treating new cases. So it's not like in terms of interacting and asking for a differing opinion or another opinion about a particular case that's ongoing. This one seems to be more specific about new cases, how you open a case. Am I reading that correctly?
I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see the words new cases, not in O'Reilly and not in Berica. Can you reread what it says there in the Kunzli?
Right. In 258 in the Kunzli version, it says, conversely, in treating new cases. That's the first five words. So is that a mistranslation?
I don't see it here in either. It's possible that it's more true to the original German. Maybe we'll put that up for discussion afterwards.
Okay, and then he gives the adjective. He prefaces the physician instead of saying the provision for physician. He says the true physician.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right, and here Berica says the true practitioner. O'Reilly
okay.
just says the medical art practitioner.
Okay, so everywhere that there's a physician, the word physician, O'Reilly does use the medical or practitioner as the definition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are we reading 259?
Okay. Let's read on to 259. We have some minutes remaining. Let's read it on more as an opener, but we should revisit it because it's a big can of worms. Well, not a can of worms, unless that's what people are eating out there. But let's see. Considering the minuteness of the doses necessary and proper in homeopathic treatment, we can easily understand that during the treatment, everything must be removed from the diet and regimen which can have any medicinal action, in order that the small dose may not be overwhelmed and extinguished or disturbed by any foreign medicinal irritant. Now here, just there's a brief footnote over here. The softest tones of a distant flute that in the still midnight hours would inspire a tender heart with exalted feelings and dissolve it in religious ecstasy are inaudible and powerless amid discordant cries and the noise of day. Who says Hanuman isn't a poet?
I was just going to say, definitely very poetic. Passionate about life, about listening, about nature, about the heart, and the effects that this has on him personally.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So here we land up within the whole situation of, are remedies easily antidoted? Can anything in the diet and regimen that may have a medicinal action? Now, medicinal actions have been attributed also in Hanuman's writing to almost anything from asparagus to potatoes, I think, to reading in bed, to...
Right, we're going to get...
There's an awful lot of things.
I'm looking
Hello?
Forward to reading... Yes, can you hear me? I'm looking forward
yeah,
to
I
reading
hear you
the whole... a very long list of items that he has. That's in 260, aphorism 260.
Mm-hmm.
So in 259, I every now since talking with you from the beginning of our radio show, whenever I read the word smallest of the dose, I think of you. You come into my mind and I feel awe. I'm always thinking, this. And it's really coming into my practice, too, that, oh, can
mm-hmm.
I get a smaller dose of that? So
yeah, have you been asking for smaller servings of ice cream lately?
That's exactly what I had in my mind, yes. this is always the way we think together. Yes, I'm asking for a smaller portion of the dessert, and... smallest dose of, because they're both sweet, aren't they? And they both
mm-hmm.
Make us feel good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's easy to understand that during treatment, that any medicinal action from an outside source, from taking in your diet or what you normally do in your routine, you might come across something that could interfere with this subtle dose that could make your heart melt if you heard the flute lilting in the background. Or the sun, you know, like you don't see the moon, you don't see the moonshine even though it's there because of the sun.
I don't know, my 13-year-old daughter raised the question to me today. She said, what do you do if a patient lies to you if they tell you that they didn't drink coffee when they did? And if they say they didn't eat something wrong or problematic, or they didn't do something wrong or problematic when they did.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very interesting question coming from her. And that's why I call this a can of worms, because I get patients coming to me now who say that they were told by a homeopath basically that they couldn't live their lives. And unless they were going to totally change their lives, they would get no benefit from homeopathy.
Well,
I know there are homeopaths who said if a patient doesn't stop smoking, it's not worthwhile them starting homeopathy.
I think it's a combination of how the medical art practitioner practices, what his theoretical base is, and also the patient. So if the doctor, if the homeopath feels, which is the way I feel very much more liberated. I used to be so strict, I didn't have a mint for 10 years. I didn't have anything that could possibly interfere with the action of a remedy, but I really feel much more free to say to people, it's okay, unless there's a specific affinity between a remedy and a specific nutritional product, like sepia and vinegar or Nature Muriaticum and mints. And, you know, there are ones that could possibly cause that. Or, you know, it depends on how you have the relationship with the patient to say that they feel good enough to say, yeah, you know what, I did have such and such. I do remember taking going into a coffee house and that's when it started not to work again. So you just give them a chance. You say, okay, well, if you think of anything, just let me know.
Mm-hmm.
I find also.
Hello?
Go ahead. I hear you.
I find also there's the question of making sure a patient doesn't start something new at the same time as starting homeopathy. Like, doesn't start drinking gourmet coffee just specifically at the same time that they start taking a remedy or taking a new remedy. Things like that. But I think that we're going to have to go into much deeper discussion of this whole subject during the next session, since now we have just a couple of minutes remaining. Debbie, is there anything further you'd like to announce about the Homeopathy World Community before we close?
I didn't have anything really prepared, but we've got so many wonderful discussions on there. I've got a new banner. It says, have a cup of coffee on Dr. Aaron Damduta. So I think that's really fun. We are a really big family who enjoys each other. It's not always serious stuff. There are fun notes. Dr. Sadhana has a really fun little case, a mystery case, and I'm hoping she'll continue to provide those for us. And we have lots of new members, so please read the guidelines before you sign up so you know exactly how to enter your application. I think our time is just about closing. Do you have an umbrella statement for today's study?
It's something like, don't play favorites.
I like it a lot. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what the reverse would be, but don't play favorites.
Okay, keep it open.
And don't be scared.
Okay. Thank you so
much.
I'm going
to put on the clothes now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Debbie, for managing to phone in.
Thank you so much, everyone. Take your book off the shelf and read it.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.